the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Dalet Tet, says, this is instructions to Yechezkel, how to survive on a minimal diet. The Yata Kaklocha, Chitim Usa'orim Upol Va'adashim V'dochan V'kusanim, V'natata Otam B'kli Echad, V'yasita Otam L'chol L'lachem. מספר הימים אשר אתה שוכב על שדך 390 יום תוכלנו. He's going to live on a strictly vegetarian diet consisting of grain and legumes. And I believe it is a fact that the amino acids and various other proteins provided by the beans supplement the proteins that are found in the grains. So that in fact this represents a diet on which a person can survive. He may not enjoy it, but it's a diet on which he can survive for a long time. So we have to, of course, try to analyze exactly what these various different plants are. And the first two we know. I mean, we know what chitim and se'orim are. They're wheat and barley. So with that dietary introduction, let me say that we... The last time we had a philological discussion about a mistake in identification in Tosfos, where Tosfos translated armonim as chestnut because of a similarity in name to the French word marronnier, whereas probably the armon that occurred in modern Hebrew, armon means chestnut, but this is derived from the identification of a Balei HaTosfot. Although that was an interesting philological fact, it has no effect whatsoever on a practical consequence as far as the halacha is concerned. But now we come to an even more basic problem. Namely, what are indeed the grains which constitute the five types of dagan? Right? We turn to my page 2, first mishnah and kalah. Chamisha dvarim chayavim b'chala. There are five types of plants which are from which you have to be mafrish chala. If you make dough from the flour of these plants, there's a requirement to set aside a certain amount for hafrashat chala. And they are hachitim, v'hasorim, v'alkusamim, v'shibolat shu'ol, v'shifon. These five species are ones which are make grain which are liable for chala. Harei elu chayavim b'chala u'mitzarfim zeh im zeh. You take grain of flour made out of wheat and flour made out of barley and mix them together, they join up. V'yasuim b'chadash l'pnei ha-pesach, and you cannot eat the new grain before Pesach, u'miliktso l'pnei ha-omer. If you eat a kezayit matzah made out of the grain, the flour of any of these, you fulfill the commandment of matzah. Kezayit chametz chayav b'karet. You have to get rid of it at Pesach. Fine. So these five species are the ones whose flour can become chametz on Pesach, or you can make matzah from, or you'd make a mosi lechem in haaretz if you made bread out of it, or you'd make a borei min mezonot if you made a cake out of it, or you'd make a polemine name as well, if you made a porridge out of it. The only minor problem that we have is what are these five species? So, let's turn the page, or go down alphabetically. Chita, we know what chita is. Chita is wheat. See, on page 5, this is Felix's description. Triticum durum, hard wheat. Okay, that's chita. No problem with that. Saora, it's on page 9, that's barley. Okay. The third one on the list is hakusamim. Okay, let's go back to kusemet on page 6. This is another form of wheat. That is triticum rice wheat, it's called. Triticum, we'll read the details of them in a moment. The next one is shibolet shu'al on page 7. According to the modern identification, shibolet shu'al is a variety of barley. Okay? And finally, shifon is a... what was the last one? Kusamim, I could believe it. Kusamim by shifon, that's on page 8. Still another variety of wheat. Spelt wheat. So we have durum wheat, we have rice wheat, we have spelt wheat, and then we have two types of barley. You have ordinary barley and double grained barley.
No.
Just exclude other types of wheat. Presumably there are others.
So that's the big problem. The big problem is, and we're not going to have to go through all of this argumentation. The big problem is Rashi and all of the Rishonim, more or less, and modern Hebrew. Translate following Rashi, translate shibolet shu'al as oats. And we're now faced with a serious, serious halachic problem, because modern science and archaeological evidence, and we will go through this in detail, indicate that Rashi was wrong. Oats are simply not one of these five species. With a minor consequence, that on oatmeal you would not make a bracha of bori mine mazonot, and on an oatmeal cookie you might not make a bracha of bori mine mazonot, and with a major consequence, that oats on Pesach are not chametz. Okay? So we have to therefore, one, try to convince ourselves that Professor Felix and the various modern scholars are right, and Rashi and all of the Rishonim were wrong. The second thing that we have to do, which is a pretty shocking situation, the second thing that we have to do is try to understand why this happened. Why, what was happening to oats, which made them a likely candidate to be declared as shibolet shu'al. And thirdly, we're going to see that this issue of why there was this misidentification and the role of oats in European society is connected with a problem which, on the face of it, would seem to have nothing to do with anything we're talking about. Namely, why did the center of economic power shift from the Mediterranean basin to the northern European countries? In other words, there's an aspect of European economic history. There's a little book here that I was told about by Chaim, Medieval Technology and Social Change, which will explain to us more or less this whole process of what's happening, and it will also explain to us the origin of this very mysterious custom that the Ashkenazim have of prohibiting kitnius on Pesach. So that little question that you asked, namely why wasn't the shibolet shu'al oats, opens up the door to a slew of interesting results and problematic situations.
If you ask me how I came up with it, I always thought that oats was one of the five meanings.
Well, you and Rashi and Tosfos.
What's his definition?
Okay, let's take a look in detail at... You see, there's also a list of false identifications, if you like. On a false identification, on page 10, identifies kusemet as buckwheat, and on page 11, identifies shibolet shu'al as oats, and on page 12, identifies shifon as rye. Okay?
Who's the identification for these, the correct ones?
This is Professor Felix. I probably violated American and other copyright law by Xeroxing these things from this book, but there it is. Okay?
Does it have American copyright?
I'm sure. Okay? In order to understand this, let's turn to my page 13. And this is, I'm going to just read with you the various Mishnayot in Masechet and Yerushalmi in Masechet Kla'im, and I'm going to be doing something very silly, just reading and translating for you, since some of you are not happy with modern Hebrew writing, of Professor Felix's analysis of the situation. So either we will or will not be convinced by his arguments. All right? So my page 13. So far we started with just simply the laws of challah, but now we come to the laws of kalayim. The laws of kalayim are, you're not allowed to plant, for example, two different species together, nor are you allowed to plant vegetables in a vineyard. But here we're talking about kla'ei zra'im, and this raises one of the most fundamental theoretical problems in statistics and biology and elsewhere, namely, how do you classify things? What constitutes a species? Today, we would use DNA comparison, presumably, to decide whether two things were closely allied and formed one species or not. The major classification into species, which was taking place into Europe in the 16th, 17th, 18th century, Linnaeus, Buffon, and various other people, would have various methods of deciding whether two types of plants or animals were to be regarded as related or distant. And we have to ask ourselves, is there a general principle for deciding this or not deciding this? And secondly, if there isn't, what was the methodology that the Gemara was using? But this is a hard theoretical question. I'm not going to go into this hard theoretical question. They're just simply saying that one can devote a whole course in statistics to the issue of taxonomy, how you decide when two things are to be regarded the same and when two things are to be regarded as similar, as different.
And today they develop species of wheats and grains
and
things to be extra hardy in certain climates and to produce more crops per year. And
right. Okay, let's read the Mishnah. You're right. I mean, the question is, for example, a peach and a nectarine are essentially the same fruit. What about a grapefruit and an orange? That's so clear. I mean,
they do that with grains, with these grains as well.
Sure. But let's take a look. So turn to my page 13. Hachitim v'hazonim einam kla'im zebaze. Chitim are wheat. Zonim we're going to have to explain, but we will follow Felix and interpret zonim to be darnel. Hachitim v'hazonim einam kla'im zebaze. Hasa'orim v'shibolet shu'al, hakusamim v'hashifol, hapul v'sapir, hapochtan v'hatofach, upul halavan v'ashurit einam kla'im zebaze. So, this is pretty strong evidence that sa'orim and shibolet shu'al belong to a similar, if not the same, species. Oats don't look anything like barley. I mean, if you look at the picture of the oats and you look at the picture of the barley, you can see that they aren't closely related at all. And therefore, since we're sure that Sa'orim means barley, it's reasonable to assume that Shibolet Shu'al is something that's pretty close to barley. Right? I mean, just look at the plants. They're just completely different. Okay. Now from the Yerushalmi. Hachitim v'hazonim einam kla'im ze baze. K'tiv, sadcha lo tizra kla'im, hayiti omer afilu shnei minei chitim, afilu shnei minei sa'orim. There's a prohibition against planting distinct things together. Does that apply to sub-species of the same species, that is, two varieties of wheat? Right, in English we have species, and then below the species we have subspecies, and below that we have varieties. So, but does this apply to two different varieties, two varieties of wheat? afilu shnei minei seorim, two varieties of barley. Vem decholot havi akvayim, hayiti yomei afilu shor shacho al gabei shor lavan, or shor lavan al gabei shor shacho, different colored animals of the same species. Ubeged klaim shatneis lo ya'ale alecha, hayiti yomei shnei minei tsemer. Afilu shnei minei tishtim, hiresh bebgadim lo tilbash shatneis tsemer ufishtim yachta. They have to be two separate species. Lo zemi min ze, velo zemi min ze. Af klaim she'asarti lecha b'chol makom, lo zemi min ze, velo zemi min ze. Hachitim v'hazalnim einam klaim ze b'ze, ha'im ha'saorim klaim. Okay, let me not go through the entire Yerushalmi, but let's pass to the beginning of... Where is his commentary begin? I guess it's on page 15. So all I'm going to do is read and translate Felix for the next 15 minutes. Afilu shnei minei chitim. He writes, Shonehi mashmaot min besafut chazal, bahorat min besystematika habotanit v'azoologi. Present day systematics of zoology or botany have a different characterization of the word species than the words what species means in Chazal. Shebesafot Chazal matzayin min spetzahies, that's the species, zemet chalek levnot min, subspecies, uvnot hamin lezanim, varieties, ve'elo yichidot lemunokit yuter kmo vnot zan betsuvot. Yechida gavoa yoter min, a higher classification from the species, hu asug genus, that's the genus, ha'asui lechalek leminim rabim. Derech mashal, for example, hamunach chitim shebesafut chazal, kolel minim achadim she'enam klaim ze bazeh. The word chitim includes various types, various species which are not considered to be klaim ze bazeh, v'kach tsuyuna chita shechamtit liad chita levana. Shnei minei chitim helu heim b'chinat shor lavan v'shor shachol inyan klayim. So as far as Chazal is concerned, these two different species of wheat are regarded as the same as far as the laws of a klayim are concerned. V'hinei mib'chinat systematit elu shnei minim shonim. Hachita hashchemtit hachita hakasha triticus durum, that's our usual hard wheat. V'hachita halavana Agdu o aguri ha chita harakatritikus ayestius. You can see the two different pictures here. L'cha'ora yotzei mikan, sha'ashem chitim mitzayim et hasug habotani chita, ulam ein davar zanachon biyachas l'kusamim, hanechshavot l'gabei din klayim l'min acher min echitim, v'od shemibchina botanit af heim shayechet l'sug chita. In other words, he's saying that modern botany would put kusemet and these two different varieties of chita all as at the same level of organization, whereas Chazal identified two things which we would today distinguish as two different species, which are not less related to one another than the kusemet would be. All right? So he says, "Harisha matzinu tzmachim ashayachim l'sug botani echad ve'enam klayim ze baze, v'shiyesh shebnei sug echad heim klayim baze, v'yesh shemabchina botani shayachim shnei tzmachim l'sugim shonim, v'achal pichein ein heim klayim ze baze." So what we see is that you can't simply take Linnaeus's classification and impose it on Chazal's interpretation. "Kefisha matzinu b'chitim u'b'zonim b'pushim u'b'ozudim." Lahadan nochiach shemeidach kisa. Later on, we will see that on the other hand, yesh zanim shonim shelo hamin nechshavin klaim zebaze. That there are types of things that we would regard it as just varieties of the same species, which Chazal distinguish into two separate types. Ein ephobia deinu kriterion madai lahadarat min inyan klaim. We therefore don't have any established scientific principle to decide what constitutes the meaning of the word min, of species, as far as Chazal is concerned. Shagormim shanim lekukhu b'cheshbon v'kriyat haminim she'em klaim zeh bazeh. In other words, Chazal were obviously using a different criterion of classification than the modern botanists. V'kein sikem Rav Yochanan in Yanze, yesh mehen shehilchu achar hapri, v'yesh mehen shehilchu achar halin. Sometimes the shape of the fruit was used to classify species, sometimes the shape of the leaf. Rabbi Yonah Mosif, yesh sheyesh vehilchu behem achrei ta'am hapri, even the flavor of the fruit. Kana makom natsayin shegam biyameinu yesh mikrim rabim shesistematikayim nechlaku beinehem b'miyun smachim uvalechayim. Even today, there is a disagreement as to the between different people who make botanical classifications as to what constitutes species and genus and so on. As I said, this was written before the time of DNA, and presumably now DNA analysis would give a more precise measurement of the distance between various different species and subspecies. Yesh hachoker achad choshev yitzur misug or misuyam l'sug olamin nifrad v'asheni choshvo rak l'tatmin or l'zan shel min kole. In other words, two different botanists can disagree as to whether two types of plants are distinct species or two different varieties of the same species.
Science now can determine more than they could, like, say, 100 years ago. And Minhag would not take preference.
Yeah, well, that's going to be, we're going to be faced with a much more serious problem than that. We're going to be faced with a much more serious problem than that. Okay, now, Hachitim v'hazonim einam klaim. Hazonim zehim luzon hamashaker, lolium temultimum. Darnell in English. Shehu esev chadshnati mimishpachat adganiyim. That's an annual grain. Hanafots besadot achitim. That is common in the fields of wheat. Betzuratam uvimishkalam domim gargorei hazun legargorei achitim. The darnell looks like the seeds of the darnell plant look like the seeds of the wheat plant. It's very hard to separate by using a sieve. Mikan shebaat zriyat achitim nizraim gam hazonim. Therefore, it follows that at the time of the planting of wheat of a wheat field, there is going to be an inevitable amount of contamination by the darnel. Alei hazon einam nidalim b'harbe me'alei tzemach achitim v'kashe eifol nachsham. So first of all, not only can't you distinguish between the seeds, it's hard. Someone expecting a call? Let me just see what this is. All right. So he first says that it's hard to distinguish between the seeds. And it's also hard to distinguish between the sprouts. So you can't weed them out in the course of doing this. Okay? Zarei hazon shomrim al kosher nevitatam shanim achadot. Furthermore, they can sprout after several years. V'lachein heim olim b'sadeh ha'tvua, gam mishin izrat v'ua nekiyam mizonim. And therefore, the darnel will make its appearance even in, if you had absolutely 100% guaranteed pure wheat seed, they will make their appearance. Gargarim elu arsiyim heim la'adam. These seeds are poisonous to man. It turns out that there's a fungus, microscopic fungus, which grows underneath the shell of the darnel seed. V'hamachilot alkaloid arsi. It contains a poisonous alkaloid. Gargarei hazon hanitchanim yachad amachita notnim tam marir lelechem hanefa mehem. They give a bitter taste to the bread. V'zeh asui legrom la'ochlo scharchores, it can make a person dizzy ad kedei yibud hakara, even to the loss of consciousness. Li'ofot bayit, on the other hand, to chickens, ulionim, and doves, ein hazonim mazikim, v'yesh yishtamshu behem lehetab sapata. So therefore these, they are used as feed, chicken feed, or bird feed. Apparently these alkaloids don't cause any damage to fowl. Okay, shekein makomot mekaimim otam liyonim. Karagil, ein adam zorei azonim, ve'eino rotzel lekaimam betruato. V'chitim, tinofet el moleim zonim, ein baleim akpidim am lididut ha'ivu, etc., etc. Okay. All right.
You
take some amount of care, but it, you know, if it's only a minute amount, then you just live with it. Hasa'ogrim, let's go. The next part, again, I'm only really interested in Felix's commentary, not in the Yerushalmi itself. Hasa'ogrim v'ashibolet shu'al ha'kusamim v'ashiponim klayim zavazel. Let's turn to page 17.
The Yerushalmi seems to have more of an interest in this topic than...
Yeah.
Than the Bavli.
There's no Bavli on the Sechet Klayim.
I'm saying, and there's no other... Masechet in the Bavli that deals with this sort of...
Well, there are some. Quotes vary. You see, the Bavli says, Kusvim min chitin shibol shol v'shifon min sa'orim. That's from the Gemara. Okay. But on my page 17, okay? Let's just go to Felix's commentary. Shema kulhon min ha'alan ka'oyah, ma'vira ayah min ha'katuv, sh'rak chamisha minim elu chayavin b'chala. That was our original Mishnah. It says that only these five types, species, are chayav v'chala. Hakashuv kan hazilui shura shibolet shu'al shehi asuya kashura. That a shibolet shu'al is made like a straight line. Barur shakatuv Yeshayahu mitkavein b'shem shura lemin truah. The phrase in Yeshayahu, which uses this word, is referring to a type of grain. There's archaeological evidence from the 8th century before the Christian era, which lists types of grain, and they are chita, seora, shora, v'sheya. Okay, shora, zuri kenirel, surei adom, yit, shenimnu liyat seorim. מדברי רשימה ונחמן נמצאו ממדים ששיבולת שועל עשויה כשורה. That שיבולת שועל is made like a ruler, like a straight line. והכוונה ששיבולותיה ישרה כסרגל. That the, how do you translate שיבולת? That the stalk of grain, the grain capsule, is straight like a ruler. כבר בכך היה שהזיהוי המקובל בימינו. From that, it's clear enough proof that the identification, which is accepted today, sheshibolet shu'al avena, that shibolet shu'al should be identified with oats, einom nachon. Sheletzemach ze mechbad zra'im rachav k'min meshulash. If you take a look at the picture of the oats, you see that it's sort of scattered all over the place, whereas the, li nir'eh, Sheshura, Shubala Shual, Zeher, Lisaora Hadu Turit, the Hordeum Disticum, the two road barley, Sheshibotleteha Shtucha Vyashara Kemin Sarger, Zraher Aruchim Beshne Turim, Umikol Zera Nimshach Sa'ara, Mela Aruka, there's a little hair that comes out of each seed. I'm on my page 17.
Oh, I'm looking at the picture.
Right, they look quite different.
But that doesn't look very straight.
Yeah. Exactly, so that's a false identification. That's what he's saying.
Oh.
That's Rashi's identification.
Page 11, yeah.
Yes, but if you look earlier, you will see, where is the Shibolet Shual? There, that's nice and straight. Okay. Bikach nevdel tzora zumin ha-tzora ha-regila. This distinguishes this form of barley from the regular form of barley, ha'arba'aturit or ha'shishaturit, which have four or six rows instead of two rows of seeds in the capsule. V'nirasha l'zihu yizeh kiven Rabbeinu Natan ava yeshiva b'peirosho l'mishnachenu ha'seorim v'shibolet shu'al al sa'ir v'sanbala el talav mutar l'zorim b'yachad shekulam seorim el shuzeh mechudad mishnei tzadim v'zeh me'arba'at tzadim. גם בתאמה שונה שהסעורה הדו-תירית נשאר הסעורים, שזרעיה בעודם רכים מתוקים יותר, לקח זורים אותה בעיקר לצורך ליטוט הביר. It's used as hops in the manufacture of beer. שמה שיבולת שועל קשור כנראה בעובדה שהיא נאכלת על ידי שועלים ותנים. That apparently the name שיבולת שועל is because it was actually right. Okay. So, Now let's get, so those are the arguments that Shibolet Shu'al is a form of barley and is nothing to do with oats. Another argument that he could have brought is that you just can't make bread out of oatmeal. It doesn't rise, it doesn't have any of the properties that you normally would expect from wheat or barley to be able to make bread out of.
They don't make oat bread?
You make oatmeal cookies.
There's oat bran bread, but it's mixed with bran
and bran. Ordinary wheat.
They make oat matzah for people who have wheat allergies.
Well, according to what we're studying now, oat matzah is not yotzei yidei chavasa b'pesach. So,
but that's a food that's not to eat.
Yeah.
If they're not to eat, then they have oats.
Okay, let's turn to page 18. On the left, on bottom of page 27, Mikan lo she'elat zihui ha-shifon, the identification of shifon, ze nechshav ledin klayim kamo kusamim, ule'inyan ha-tam nechshav yachad im shibol ha-shual kamin sa'orim. V'yameinu nitkabel ha-shem shifon ledagan shogilim lezaro wa'arsot ha-tzafon b'merkaz Europa ha-sekala, rye. In other words, again, Rashi's identification is shifon with rye. Zihu zeba kenirem bikvot perush Rashi haloeiz v'psachim v'nachot shan shifon segela. V'ram ein safek shezihui ze mut'am yikaro. There can be no doubt that this identification is false on the face of it. V'pnei sheba'aretz lo hikiru gidul ze k'shem shelo hikiru hu v'mitzrayim ha'itika. This rye was not known either in Israel or in ancient Egypt. יש רוצים לסתייר בזיוון שיפון סקלה מן הערבית שבדרום סוריה מציין השם שיפון את הסקלה הגדולה ברם, ברם שופן שפון בערבית הוא שם כולל לדגני בר. You can't bring any proof to that because that's just a generic name for wild grains. כך מציינים שמות אלו בסוריה את הבנת הבר, the wild oats, ואף על פי שיש רוצים לזהות אלו לשיפון שבמשנה לך, אף מביא ראי נוספת לזה ישון לבנת משמו הרמי דיסקו שבסוריה דשרו, רם הניקובים שהביאו לאל נגד זיהוי הבנה לשיבול התשועל נכונים גם במקרה זה, במיוחד לאור ההלכה שהשיפון וכוסמת אינם קלעים זה בזה, בעוד שהבנה והכוסמת שונות בהחלט זו מזו. They simply don't look anything alike. ואשר לדמיון השמות בערבית ובסורית, להיזהר מלקבור על פיהם את זיהוי של הצמח הנזכר במקרה במשנה. You shouldn't rely on the similarity of an Arabic name to make this kind of identification. Especially if all you have is a philological similarity, but the description of the plant doesn't match with the description given by Chazal to the plant. The names of plants can change and be transferred from one species to another. Spelt wheat, tmunazayin. Kvishalo eza aruch shifon aspilta. Kitata spelta nidelet nishar mine hakitin bakach se shibuloteha dalat shiboliot, it has few shibolot, but domela sawim dvukim mosel gagarim. Hagagar muhudad bakitso vakemashalo enomina mashubachim. Its flower is not of the best. Biomenu magadlimet kitata spelta biadmata dalot shibemakaz Europa uvidroma. It's grown on poor land. It appears that they did grow spelt wheat in ancient Egypt. We don't have any direct evidence that it was planted in Israel. That it was only a small amount of propagation in any event. So we now have four out of the five. Now let's turn to the...
Spelt is
shifon. Mikan lezuyu ha-kusamim. Rashi mezahed kusamim lachitat ha-spelta. Rashi identifies kusamim with spelt. Baram kemat she'en cholkem al zuyu ha-kusamet lachita ha-dugarinit. the double wheat. Zukru yabi amarat kunta o gulba, and he read that also Rabbi Elisha shemot krusma o gulba shurim b'mivne hamalin, the structure of the hairs. Shalachita haduga inichim tsarim v'nirak gzuzim o ktsutzim. They look like they've been cut off. The din klayim nechshavu hakshishifon hakusanim leminachad ekev demyon hashibolef ha'motzim ha'tofim et ha'gargar. Ach le'inyon tiv ha'kemach v'ta'amo nechshavu hakusanim leminachad im achitim. V'yamnam mushubach ha'kemach shel achita hadugar rinit mikemach hashifon aspelta. The flour of the double-grained wheat is far superior to spelt wheat. Shenechshavu la'inyon hatam yachad ha'mashibolet sh'olim inzorim. Okay? So to summarize then, let's just go back to our pictures. We then have Chita is page 5 is Triticum Durum, right? Kusemet is double grain wheat, Triticum Diococcum, that's on page 6.
Double,
means that there's just the
two
rows of, seeds coming out. You can see from the structure in the picture.
Yeah.
Okay?
Not really, but
all right. Shibolet Shual is two-rowed barley. Right?
Yeah,
Shifon is spelt wheat. That's on page 8. And on page 9, Sa'ora is ordinary barley. So of the Hamisha Taminim, what we have, in effect, is two types of barley and three types of wheat.
No rye.
No rye, no oats, no millet, no nothing else. Two types of barley and three types of wheat. All right. Now, let's take a look maybe in the Encyclopedia Britannica. I'm not going to read the whole section on wheat. Let's take a look at the section on oats.
The two alternatives to wheat matzo that they sell are spelt and oat. It would seem from him that spelt would be the only...
Spelt is okay,
right,
oat is not oat.
Right.
That's my page 34. Let's take a look in the oat. The word is not found in cognate languages. It may be allied with French eitel, not nodule, a cereal belonging to the tribe of Avenae of the order of Gramineae grasses. The genus Avena contains about 50 species, mostly dispersed through the temperate regions of the Old World. The spikelets form a loose panicle, familiar in the cultivated oak, the firing bloom having its dorsal rib prolonged into an awn. You can see that. Okay. The origin of the cultivated oak is generally believed Avena fatua, or wild oat, or some similar species, of which several exist in southern Europe and western Asia. Professor Buchtmann succeeded in raising the potato oat type and the white Tartarian oat type from the grain of this species. The white and black varieties of species were cultivated in England and Scotland from remote times and are still grown as a crop in Orkney. Avena strigosa is probably the only variety of the cultivated oat. The naked oat, Avena nuda, was found by Bunga in wasteland around Peking. It was identified by the botanist Lindley with a pill corn of old agriculture. If you go near the bottom of this page, on the left-hand side, with regard to the antiquity of the oat, A. de Candolle observes that it was not cultivated by the Hebrews, the Egyptians, the ancient Greeks, and the Romans. So this was just simply not a cultivated crop in ancient times. Central Europe appears to be the locality where it was cultivated earliest, at least in Europe. The grains have been found among the remains of Swiss dwellings, perhaps not earlier than the Bronze Age, while Pliny alludes to bread made of it by the ancient Germans. Pickering also records Galen's observation that it was abundant in Asia Minor, especially where it was made into bread as well as given to horses. Besides the use of the straw when cut up and mixed with other fruit for fodder, the oat grain constitutes an important food for both man and beast. The oat grain, is like that of barley, is closely invested by the husk. Oatmeal is made from the kiln-drying grain from which the husks have been removed, and the form of the food is the well-known porridge. That's oatmeal. In Ireland, where it's sometimes mixed with Indian corn meal, Indian corn means our corn, it's called starabout. Groats or grits are the whole kernel from which the husk is removed. They're used as for gruel, which is often used to be consumed as an ordinary drink in the 17th century at the coffee houses in London. The meal can be baked into cake or biscuit as the Passover cake of the Jews, but it cannot be made into loaves in consequence of the great difficulty in rupturing the starch grains unless the temperature be raised to a considerable height. So in other words, you can't make ordinary bread out of it. When they talk about bread, they're talking about biscuits. That was your question. Okay. Well, whatever. With regard to the nutritive value of oatmeal as compared to that of wheat flour, it contains a higher percentage of albuminoids than any other grain. For example, 12.6, that of wheat being 10.8, then less of starch, 58.4, as against 66.3 in wheat. It has rather more sugar and a good deal more fat. Lastly, salts amount to 3% in oat and only about 1.7 in wheat. Its nutritive value, therefore, is higher than that of ordinary second swallow.
This was written when?
This is the Encyclopedia Britannica, 1911.
Yeah, I know Rabbi always had an old one. Yeah. The old set. The new ones don't have this information.
No, you can't get this information. All right. So we still, I think we are convinced by Felix's argument and all the other archaeological argument that Shibboleth Shu'al cannot be oats. And it's most likely exactly what he identifies it as a double-grained. They didn't have oats. So why did they start with oats? In other words, why have oats become such an important staple in European diet, especially in Northern Europe? And as I said, this is related to an entirely different question. If you look to my page 48, this is again illegally xeroxed from this book by White called Medieval Technology and Social Change. In 1937, there appeared posthumously the masterpiece of the Belgian historian Henri Poiren, Mahomet Charlemagne. Since then, it has dominated discussions of the economic history of the Mediterranean from the 5th to the 10th century. According to Poiren, the Western Roman world did not fall, it slowly disintegrated. Until 700, the essential unity of the Mediterranean was preserved despite political chaos. Levantine traders continued to do business as far west as the Merovingian kingdom, and indeed this commerce may have been reactive as in earlier and happier times. But the upsurge of Islam in the 7th century tore apart the seamless road of the Middle Sea. Commercial connections with the East were severed, and the conquest of Visigothic Spain by the Muslims in the 8th century left the Frankish king as the only considerable power in what was left of the Latin West. Cut off from the great currents of continuing life of the Mediterranean, the Frankish realm turned in upon itself and became the nucleus of a new kind of civilization. The Islamic smashing of the Mediterranean cultural and commercial unity was, according to Perrin, the most essential event in European history that had occurred since the Punic Wars. It was the end of the classical tradition. It was the beginning of the Middle Ages. Without Mohammed, Charlemagne would have been inconceivable. This was Perrin's theory as to what was happening in Europe between, say, the 7th and 8th century and the 10th and 11th century.
As far as the Jewish people are concerned, the Golden Age took place under Islam, or the Empire.
Yeah, well, that was in Spain. Yeah. No other historical work of our century has provoked such an outburst of research, mostly in opposition. His critics have now destroyed Perrin's thesis in the greatest detail. Mediterranean commerce suffered a long and steady decline. The Islamic conquest did not close the Mediterranean to the meager trade still existing between the Orient and the rest. The economic historians can draw no sharp line between Merovingian and Carolingian times as regards context and ease. But this controversy has been misleading. Perrin's explanations have been cut to bits, but what he was trying to explain has not yet been clarified by other means. The observable fact from which he started was a shift of the focus of Europe in Carolingian times from south to north, from the classic lands of the Mediterranean to the great plains drained by the Loire, the Seine, the Rhine, the Elbe, the Upper Danube, and the Thames. The lands of the olive and vine remain vigorous and creative, but who can doubt that, save for the Seine and the Dactyle? Yeah. Something wrong? 78, yeah, except for brief periods, excuse me, my page 49, right. Except for brief periods, the core of European culture has been north of the Alps and the Loire from the 9th century to our own day. If Karen's answer has been refuted, his question remains. A more durable solution of the historical problem of the change of the gravitational center of Europe from south to north is to be found in the agricultural revolution of the early Middle Ages. By the early 9th century, all the major interlocking elements of this revolution had been developed. The heavy plow, the open fields, the modern harness, the triennial rotation, everything except the nailed horseshoe, which appears 100 years later. To be sure, this transition to the three-field system made such an assault on existing peasant properties that its diffusion beyond the Frankish heartland was slow. But Charlemagne's renaming of the months indicates how large the new agricultural cycle loomed in his thinking. We must safely assume that its increased productivity was a major stimulus to the North, even in his day. So let me tell you, so now we can go back and see.